Good evening, and welcome to Monday Night Playhouse. I'm Allison Seeley-Smith, Artistic Director of Obsidian Theatre Company in Toronto, and your host for our special series of dramas showcasing the work of writers and performers of African-Canadian heritage. Tonight, we present Je Me Souviens by Lorena Gale. This powerful dramatic monologue evokes her childhood and coming of age as an African-Canadian in Montreal, at a time when the political landscape called for a separate and sovereign Quebec. Here now is Je Me Souviens, written and performed by Lorena Gale.
I'm on Commercial Drive sitting in Joe's Cafe. I just bumped into another expatriate, and like those from the old country, hungry for news from home, whenever we meet, we always reminisce or share news of the others we have left behind. It is a ritual of love and remembrance played out on alien soil by emigres all over the world. Only, we're in Vancouver, and home is Montreal, the same country. At least today it is. We speak in English, my first language and her second. We speak in English because I don't know Greek. We speak candidly, without forethought, without apology. Around us, we hear snatches of Italian, Arabic, Spanish, Portuguese, Cantonese, Urdu, etc. We speak unashamedly and to each other. So I say to my compatriot, I just came back from Montreal. I can't believe how much has changed. Everything for sale, everything for rent, liquidation, going out of business, and everywhere these tacky dollar stores. And they're the only ones that seem to be doing any real business. Sad. I've never seen Montreal looking so bad. And the next thing I know, there's this long-haired, grunged-out French guy in my face saying, "Hey, you don't say that! You don't talk about Montreal!" He'd been listening in on our private conversation, which had obviously offended him, and had half risen from his seat to stretch across his table and point an accusatory finger at me, like he was the long arm of the language police and had nabbed himself another Anglo traitor. His look was irate and triumphant, like one spoiling for a fight. My friend immediately put her head down like someone trying to avoid one. Me? I was stunned into momentary silence. What could I possibly have said to offend him? That Montreal looked poorly and depressed? The truth? For a second there, I thought I was in a cafe on Saint-Denis Street a little too drunk, voicing my insensitive Anglo opinions on the political situation a little too loud, and this brave soldier in the struggle for Quebec independence was standing forth to eradicate this heretic from their midst. I looked around expecting to see a room full of hostile and contemptuous people. No one was paying any attention. I was still in Lotus Land. What did I care, since I wasn't talking to him anyway, so I told him to F off and mind his own business. And no, you F off, it is my business. Me, I'm from Montreal. I know you, you don't say nothing. Tu n'as pas le droit. I don't have the right. I don't have the right. My friend hates confrontation. She tells me to ignore him. He's an asshole. He's just looking for a fight. Come on, let's go somewhere else. But I have gone somewhere else. 3,600 miles to somewhere else, and I cannot back down. I don't have the right. Why? Because I'm black? Why? Because I'm English? Ah, you don't know nothing. Ah, je sais, moi, je sais assez que toi, si, et si je n'avais rien su, j'aurais eu le même droit à parler que toi. Toi, tu parles français? Oui, je parle français. Je viens de Montréal. Oui, je suis montréalaise. Je suis née à Montréal. Et j'ai le droit à parler, le même droit à parler que toi ici, avec n'importe qui, n'importe où. OK, so F off. Hey, c'est correct. Je m'excuse. You come from Montréal, I thought. Hey, you know I'm from Montréal too, and I thought. He picked up his backpack and wandered out onto the drive. My friend was examining the residue at the bottom of her cappuccino. She hadn't said a word through the entire altercation, and I could tell she wanted to go, too. I still wanted to share my memories of Montreal. But the moment was lost. She had to run, and so we parted. You know, I'd see him on the drive from time to time with a group of other young Quebecois beneath the rainbow outside of Joe's Cafe. his shoulders hunched from the weight of his backpack, his long hair matted into incongruous dreads. He is all passion and gesture and speaks French with a fury so familiar, but I can no longer follow. And when I pass, he mumbles, "Salut," in grudging recognition. We are both, after all, from the same place. His Montreal is my Montreal. His Quebec is the Quebec of my birth. Like heads and tails, we are two faces of the same coin, one inscribed in French, the other English. And we're both so far from home. I am an expatriate, anglophone, Montréalaise, Québécoise, exiled in Canada. And I remember. Je me souviens.
Mon pays, ce n'est pas un pays, c'est l'hiver. Mon jardin, ce n'est pas un jardin, c'est la plaine. Mon chemin, ce n'est pas un chemin, c'est la neige. Mon pays, ce n'est pas un pays.
Je me souviens d'un rêve que j'avais souvent depuis mon enfance. Dans le rêve, c'est l'hiver. Et je suis seule dans une plaine, une grande plaine de neige. Il y a de la neige partout. Autant que les yeux peuvent voir. Pas d'arbres, pas de maison, rien que de la neige. De la neige qui n'a pas été disfigurée, immaculée, implacable, pure. Le soleil est un cercle parfait d'un jaune foncé, suspendu dans un ciel qui est bleu, bleu et clair. Et c'est froide. Tellement froide, si froide que ça pique. Et les rayons de soleil sur la neige aveuglante. Je veux rentrer chez moi, mais je ne sais pas où je suis. Aucune signe de civilisation. Je suis perdue. Je suis perdue dans une plaine de neige aveuglante.
Captain's log, stardate 1961. We have been living amongst a small tribe of colored outcasts in an area of the city known today as Little Burgundy, located within the outer perimeter of the downtown central core. Our crew, assembled from Jamaica, Sri Lanka, New Guinea, Bermuda, and St. Catharines, Ontario, has spent more than 75 Earth years and 3 human generations in this location. But our work here has come to an end. May 1st, 0800 hours, we leave downtown, traveling at warp speed east along Dorchester, north on Park Avenue, west on Bernard, and north again on De Rocher, successfully circumventing Mont Royal, the pimple local inhabitants call a mountain in the middle of the city. We have set a course for Outremont. Our mission? To seek life in new neighborhoods, to boldly go where no black has gone before. Yo!
French filters through his ambient sound, and English is spoken heavily and accented. My new neighbors' names are Van Dorn, Petrovich, Lieberman, Papanikolopoulos, Mancini, Osler, Asra. And each one speaks a language I cannot understand and sounds stranger to me than I'm sure I look to them. Men with payas and long dark coats and fur-rimmed hats, even in summer, huddle in the middle of the sidewalk, passionately discussing the Torah in Yiddish. Greek mothers hang out of their windows and holler for their kids, Yanni Stavro Selado! Italian men in cotton undershirts sit on kitchen chairs drinking wine out on the stoop and smack their kids for stealing a sip. Did we really move across the city or to another continent? Immigrants, my mother calls them. Beings from another country, not born here like us. But no one is like us in Outremont. They say...
Allez, retourne dans ton pays.
Abaita, terse rima in chepa.
Vuelve a tu país.
Perché non ritorni di dove vieni.
Kijk zurück von wannen du kommst.
But I cannot understand them. Mr. Camille lives next door. He's a friendly old man with watery eyes and splotchy red skin, and sits on his balcony chain-smoking, players playing and rocking back and forth. He sends me to Fine Ass to get his cigarettes, but I'm not allowed to cross the street, so I go up to Frank's, which is on the same side, and when I get back, he gives me a nickel. He tried to give me a dime once, but I gave it back. Nickels are better. They're bigger than dimes. Mrs. Camille wears only cotton house dresses with faded floral patterns and the same tan cardigan. Whenever you see her, she has a smile on her face, but I know she cries all the time. I know because their bedroom wall is shared with mine, and I hear her muffled sobbing, moaning, sometimes wailing on the other side. She tries to hide it, but I can tell. Her eyes are as red as the smile she paints on her face. Mr. Camille, why does Mrs. Camille cry all the time?
Hey, my wife, she's not always so happy. But why should you care? You're just a little girl. What can I tell you that you would understand? Why does Mrs. Camille cry? Do you know what is Holocaust? No, 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 you're too young to know this. Do you know what are Jews? Mrs. Camille and I, we are Jews, Jewish people. And we are different, yes. Wherever we go in the world, we are different. Maybe not so much here, but we are different. Some people in the world, they don't like different. Some people in the world think they are so much better than everyone else. Not because the things they do are extraordinary or good. No, they just think they are better. And they want everyone to be like them. This, of course, is impossible, but this is what they want. And if you are not like them, if you are different, then they persecute you, try to control you, enslave you, yes, to kill you. The Jews, for many centuries, were slaves. Yes, just like you and your African peoples, we Jews were slaves once. But slavery is not tolerated so much anymore. So they persecuted us, tried to kill us, all of us. And this is what is Holocaust. But some of us escape. Mrs. Camille, she escaped too. But many millions did not escape. Mrs. Camille's mother, Mrs. Camille's father, her sister Yeti, her brother David, all were lost in the Holocaust. And that is why Mrs. Camille, she cries sometimes. She cries because she misses her family. You smart girl, I think. Smart enough to ask questions, yes, the answers maybe you don't like or understand so well, but one day everything will make sense to you. I want you to remember what I'm telling you, because you too are different, and it is important that you remember. These people who think they are so great, so superior, these people are everywhere. Yes, even here in this Montreal today. That is why you and me, we must never forget who we are. Because we are different, we must remember. Because if we forget, it could happen all over again. Do you understand? Good. Now take your nickel and go buy some candy. I've had enough of your questions for one day. And don't ask Mrs. Camille. She doesn't like to talk about it. Go. Outremont, Montreal, Quebec, the 60s. Before Star Trek. Before Black Power. Before Say It Loud. I'm Black and I'm Proud. Before Black is Beautiful. Black people are said to have hair like steel wool, liver lips, oh, and some people even believed we had tails. Don't ever let a white man rub your head, my mother warned. Like the fat, polished tummy of a Buddha,
they'd rub your head for luck. My mother cleans like one possessed and dresses me for Sunday every day. The whole flat sparkles with a maniacal gleam, and I, too, am squeaky clean and proper. When she's not cleaning, she's working, cutting loose threads and sewing labels on children's clothes delivered in large boxes to the flat, or studying into the wee hours for her nursing exams. She says they think we're dirty and lazy, and so we must be very careful how we present ourselves. We must always put our best foot forward and strive to excel excellence. Hard work and cleanliness are the key. I don't know who they are, and I don't care what they think. I want to play. Instead, I sit like Atlas on the balcony and watch the other grubby children on the ground below rev imaginary engines in their dinky cars, making roads in the dust. Don't be asking me to go down there. There's nothing on these streets for you, and I will not have you running around the streets like some wild urchin trying to find that out. Don't you know that's what they expect from us? You have everything you need right here, so make yourself content. Look, I know you think I'm being hard on you right now, but you have got to understand. We're colored and living in the white man's world. Don't think for a moment you can do like they do. We are called nigger in two official languages, as well as several unofficial others. Black, too, is a fighting word, but sounds like Negro in so many languages. I do not respond. My brother's fists fly daily. But it is the English slur that is the slur of choice. Even among French kids who find that négresse noire does not have the right rhythmic impact. Anglo, Franco, and Allophone children walk in packs behind you chanting taunts. Nigger black, nigger black, nigger black, nigger black on the way to school. All the way to school. I walk alone. Their voices in the night. Dark voices. Warm as gingerbread and comfortingly familiar. It's Saturday night and the folks have come up from downtown. My uncles, my sister's school friends. And they brought chicken from the Chalet Lucerne. I smell it sweet and pungent through the stench of cigarette smoke. And in the morning, there'll be a wing, my favorite part, saved for me.
On a Sunday afternoon.
The young rascals croon softly in the background. Something groovy is going on, and I want to be a part of it.
A colored man walks into a greasy spoon and sits down at the lunch counter. The waitress comes over and says, "Sorry, we don't serve niggers here." The colored man says, "That's all right, I don't eat them."
Laughter explodes like a raisin in the sun, rising beyond humor to an almost hysterical crescendo, then diminishes into painful recognition, followed by silence, interminable and dense.
I have a dream.
And when they speak again, their tones are hushed and somber. There's a man with a dream, and a woman on the bus, and a young boy hanging from a tree. The panthers have left the jungle and have moved to the city. Because there's a war overseas, and colored people are supposed to be free? Huh. They say the days of slavery are over. Oh, but the men in white hoods snatch you at night. That's why Chicago's burning. People are sitting in Arkansas. People are sitting in Alabama. Malcolm. No, Martin. No, 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 Malcolm. No, Martin. No, Malcolm. Is going to overcome. Change!
When are we all gonna be free?
Change!
I remember when they wouldn't serve us in the restaurants on St. Catherine Street.
We have our rights.
But let us in the movie theater.
Education is the
change.
Key.
By any means necessary.
Yet lift me up.
Change!
Hey, we could be doing a lot worse. We could be living in the States or South Africa with that apartheid shit.
Change.
I'd say we're damn lucky to be Canadians.
When was the last time you tried to get out of downtown? Oh, that doesn't mean anything. We have laws to protect us.
At least we don't have to worry about crosses burning and getting lynched.
Amen.
The debate rages into the night.
But folks are dying in America.
I fall asleep with my ear.
For our rights.
To the door.
Outremont, Montreal, Quebec. The 60s. Gang of kids waited for me in the schoolyard. "What will you do now that your leader's dead?" they rumbled. I ran home in fear of what they might do to me and found my mother slumped over the kitchen table, crying.
They shot him. The bastards shot him. They couldn't let an intelligent black man live. They couldn't lynch him, so they shot him. Martin Luther King. Oh, God. Our leader is dead and my mother is moaning. I want to stop her tears, bring him back to life. Anything to keep my mother's strength from crumbling before me. But she wasn't crumbling. She was angry. And the fierceness she'd kept hidden from me was like fire in her eyes.
Don't you ever trust the whites. Every time you try to rise up, they'll beat you down again. They'll try to rob you of your dignity. They'll try to steal your pride. They'll take everything you have in this world just to keep you in your place. They'll even try to take your life. But there is one thing God gave you that's yours to keep forever, and they can't take that from you unless you give it up to them. I'm talking about your soul, Lorena. Don't ever give away your soul, you hear me? I'm talking about survival in the white man's world. Don't give up no matter how hard it gets. Just keep pounding on that door and someday it'll open for you.
And that dream that was Martin, that light on the periphery of my existence, flares in the heaven like a star turned nova and shines on me through my mother's eyes. They may have killed our leader, but they haven't killed our hope.
Je suis perdue dans une plaine de neige aveuglante. Je me couvre les yeux des mains pour les protéger du soleil. Je commence à croire que je vais mourir là. Mon cœur et mon corps complètement congelés. Non, je ne veux pas mourir comme ça. Il faut que je trouve un moyen de sortir d'ici. Il faut que je bouge.
Gotta find me an angel.
Oh, Mama, is anybody ever gonna love me?
Oh, you got plenty of time for that nonsense. If you spent more time worrying about your future than boys, you might find yourself getting someplace. And don't mess your life up by getting pregnant. Keep your skirt down and your legs crossed and stay away from white boys.
He says he loves me, but he won't speak English. He says, "Je t'aime, Laurel. Je t'aime." I want to believe him, but my name is Lorena. He says he loves me, but he won't speak English. He is a vrai piquesse and won't dare to speak a word of the language of his oppressor. But the truth is, my broken French is better than his English, and I think it embarrasses him. When we're with his friends, he speaks a rapid-fire joie that is bewildering to follow. I try to nod my head and laugh in the appropriate spaces.
Nobody's fooled.
Each exchange is followed with "comprends-tu?" or explained in baby syllables. Il a dit que blah, blah, blah. Comprends-tu? And sometimes when I try to contribute to the conversation, I'm told to just speak English. They say, "C'est pas français comme une vache espagnole." But when we're alone, his breath hot upon my neck, he murmurs, "J'aurais toujours envie de te serrer fort dans mes bras." I hear, "I want always that you claw hard in my arms." His words of love get lost in my kinky translations. Instead, I interpret the intimacy of his touch, the soft intensity in his eyes, and abandon myself to the rhythms of his romantic language. I'm making love in French. And then I understand that he will always want to hold me in his arms, because that is where I always want to be. He says he loves me, but he won't speak English. I turn to say, "I love you too," but check myself and say, Stem. I want to say more, but the words get scrambled in my mind. Les mots ne viennent pas facilement. He says he loves me, but he won't speak English. He wants to take me home. À Drummondville, son endroit. I don't really want to go. My love life is like the lyrics of a Janis Ian song. I know what heartache lives down that road. Still, we wind our way east along the St. Lawrence, through small towns with church spires gleaming white against a clear blue sky, meandering towards his history. The farther from Montreal we get, the more conspicuous I feel. I see surprise in the faces of the diners and the cast crew in St. Hyacinth, where we stop for lunch. Some sneak a peek at me between bites of hamburger steak, and others gawk openly like I'm some strange and shameful beast. He is oblivious to my discomfort. Love is blind.
Le cul sur le bord, j'ai qu'à dire dans les villes en l'autre. J'ai changé un petit foutin avec le grand Jean Monferra. On a parlé du vin, de la pipi, du bon temps. Puis j'ai dit, Joe, dis-moi comment que t'es devenu un féant.
His folks are of vieille souche, les habitants, sturdy, unpretentious folk, their faces warm and open. Omer, with his belt buckle lost beneath his gross bedoune, pumps my hand enthusiastically. Bienvenue! Bienvenue! And Henriette, with her plain tan cardigan buttoned devoutly to her neck, takes my face in both her hands and kisses my cheeks. Nous sommes très contents de te voir enfin. Marcel avait parlé beaucoup de toi. Viens, viens t'asseoir. Une place spéciale pour toi. Henriette don't speak no English. Me, I don't speak good English, but I try. Comme vous voulez. Je parle français. Pas très bien, mais j'essaie aussi. And we laugh. I'm surprised. They want me to like them as much as I want them to like me. He says he loves me, but he won't speak English. Big deal. I am elated. He says he loves me, and he wants to live with me. My Anglo friends complain they never see me anymore. They feel betrayed, but they don't understand. This language that I live in, this English I take shit for each time I leave my home, is not my English. Each word's a link, each phrase a chain that's forged in centuries of slavery. I speak masses tongue, and though I've learned to master the language of my subjugation, I still yearn for the authentic voices of the lost generations of my ancestry. We share in spirit a desire to preserve what is left of our shattered identities. Together we'll fight the powers of oppression and live as revolutionaries in the struggle for social change. Together we'll smash the shackles of colonial domination. Two niggers in America united by love. Free at last! Free at last! Vive Québec libre! Free at last! So I renounce my Anglo roots and move in with him into a four-room flat on Colonial in Duluth. We do the things that lovers do. Play in bed until two. Then crawl out into the afternoon sun, still entwined like differing plants that grow together, their leaves a tangle of familiarity. Inseparable. Window shop on Saint-Denis and browse in bookstores along the way. This book is far from ostentatious. No bold print or glossy cover screaming for a sale. But sepia-toned and made to look like aged and faded paper. It is the doleful black face on the cover that compels me to innocently pick it up and crack its spine. They say a picture's worth a thousand words in any language. It's not the smoldering remains of what had been a man that shocks me. His once black features charred beyond recognition. It is the 20 or 30 white men who stand behind the pyre, proudly arranged like graduates for a class picture. Their shameless hatred. They didn't even bother to wear their hoods or robes. Exposed and smiling for the camera, their eyes all seem to follow me. Pandora's book, I want to snap it shut. But it's too late. I've been identified. He says, "Don't look, Lorraine. Don't look." But I can't look away. I can't just look away. Every time we pass that bookstore, I have to stop and look. Each time he says, "Don't look, Loren, don't look. Why do you have to look at that?" These men who think they are so great, they are so much better, these men are everywhere. I have to remember their faces. I forget sometimes who I am and where I ultimately come from. These men remind me that a lapse of memory could one day prove itself to be fatal. And I want him to look with me. It is important that he look with me. Regarde, Marcel, regarde. Quel sort des hommes peut faire ça? He says he loves me. He says, "I love you, Lorraine. I look at you and I see you. I don't see no color. Just Lorraine and I love him. I want to believe him. But I am more than the languages I speak. Who I am is embedded in every cell of my skin. How can he love what he can't see? What he won't see? I was blind, now I see. I see it everywhere. In the eyes of the other that look right through me as if I am not there. In the eyes of the dark, the dispossessed, red-rimmed, watery rage, suppressed and masked with stoicism. I see that my mother strove so hard to spare me, prepare me for. A world that's quick to judge a person solely on the basis of the color of their skin and not their merit. A world where white is might, and if you happen to be born black, well, there's always room at the back of the bus, otherwise step down. This world isn't south of anywhere. It's north, true north, strong and free, but only for the fair. I walk, unemployed and almost homeless, through streets of slushy gray, raining gray rain from a gray sky, relying on the kindness of strangers and finding that most are all too familiar in their response. I see why each apartment's just been rented when I show up for a viewing. I see why the perfect candidate just precedes me at each job interview. Is it my stomach rumbling or the awakening anger within? I walk like a target through these streets, past scores of Haitian cabbies fired from the SOS cab company for being what they cannot change. Past three middle-aged black women on their way home from church being frisked by the police because they are suspected of being? Past Anthony Griffin, gunned down by authorities and lying in a pool of his own innocence and blood. There's Ruben Francois, black snow goat, waiting on the corner of Crescent and St. Catharines with a can of gasoline in one hand and a book of his self-published poems in the other. There's fire in his heart, though his smile is serene. Anointing himself like a Buddhist priest, he calls to me, "Get up and fight! It's everybody's everything!" He calls to me. By God, I light the candle, burn the incense, the smoke in my head, a hole in my soul. Proudly walk I these streets in my search to be free, the spirit by my side. "Someday soon you'll know what I mean," he calls, then sets himself ablaze in protest. And I walk past white-only restaurants and white-only taxi stands and white-only apartment buildings and white-only nightclubs, and I see the unlegislated signs of segregation. Subtle, but tacitly agreed upon. Unspoken in two official languages.
Il faut que je trouve un moyen de sortir d'ici. Il faut que je bouge. Au loin, très loin, il y a quelque chose à peine perceptible. Un tout petit point noir, là-bas, où le ciel et la neige s'embrassent sur ligne d'horizon. Un tronc d'arbre, peut-être, une roche. Pas après pas, je marche vers ce point. Il me semble que plus je marche, plus loin est ma destination, que je ne vais jamais y arriver. Mais ça de mouvement, et ça me réchauffe, et je retrouve mon espoir.
Go.
We're sitting on her balcony at the Rock Hill Apartments. The sun rolls down the slopes of Mount Royal Cemetery and dances off the crystalline patches of melting snow, tender green shoots of new spring grass, and the glistening headstones of the gone, but not forgotten. Bundled like a baby in Hudson's Bay blankets, she complains about the cold and dampness, but I insist that we stay outside just a little while longer. She barely leaves the apartment anymore and could use the fresh air.
Go.
You wouldn't know that she's 57 to look at her. She looks like she could be my sister, and I'm the youngest of 5 adult children. It is her hands that reveal her true internal age, which is about 75. Her clothes disguise the rest.
Go.
These hands have large, misshapen knuckles and fingers that are crippled and bending at the joints every which way. Her Zeds, she calls them. A tempting humor. Mostly, she keeps them hidden from view.
Go.
I drop to my knees and rest my head in her lap. And despite the pain I know she feels, she takes one of these hands and smooths back my hair, caresses my brow. I say, "Oh, Mama, is anybody ever gonna love me?" She says, "I love you." "Oh, Ma, that's not what I mean." "You got plenty of time for that nonsense," she says. "Mama, you've been saying that to me since I was 14 years old." And she takes a lock of my hair between her crooked fingers and tickles my ear like when I was a child and she wanted to wake me. Only I am awake. And a woman now.
Go.
I say, "Ma, what if that person that's meant for only me isn't even in Montreal? Lord knows I've beaten my heart to death running these streets looking for them. What if they're somewhere else in the world just waiting to meet me? It's possible." "Anything is possible," she says, "if you believe." And one of these hands attempts to squeeze my shoulder reassuringly. I say, as conversationally as possible, "You know, Lisa's gone to Vancouver." She says,
"Uh-huh."
I say, "Yeah. And, you know, Louise is in Ottawa, and Brenda's just got this great job in Toronto. Pretty soon I won't have any friends left here at all."
"Have you found a job yet?" she asks. "Nah," I say, "but I'm okay for a few months. Something will turn up soon."
For the longest time, these hands sit heavy and silent upon my shoulders.
"Go," she says.
"Go to the farthest place and work your way back if you have to. You can always come home if you have to." But how can I, in good conscience, leave these hands? These hands that slapped and nursed me, that played the Moonlight Sonata or delighted in braiding my hair. These hands can no longer carry a Steinberg's bag, button a blouse, pick a dime from a change purse, or brush her own still black and lustrous hair. These aching hands, how can I leave these aching hands when they obviously need me so? As if reading my thoughts, she adds,
"As long as I'm here, you'll always have a home to come back to. So go.
Go. Don't worry about me. I'll be just fine. I've survived this long, haven't I?" I put my arms around her waist and bury my face in her lap. The osteoarthritis is all through her body, and though it pains her to be held, she endures my embrace. I smell her through the blankets, the smell beneath her perfume, her smell. I love her smell. How can I leave her smell? She pats me on the back and laughs.
"I'll help you pack."
And then these hands release me, like 1,000 yellow butterflies fluttering. Goodbye.
Rain, 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 rain.
Dear Louise, greetings from soggy Vancouver. It's been raining for 8 days straight, and the streets are covered in slugs. Brown, slimy things, not unlike long, runny turds that ooze along the sidewalk. Oh, the streets are just slithering with them. Really gross.
Can't believe it's been 3 months already. It feels like forever and ever.
I moved out of my sister's windowless basement in Surrey and into a one-bedroom apartment on the downtown West End. There's nothing in it but my bed, but it is 3 blocks from English Bay. And I have developed a fondness for sitting on the beach and watching the ships roll in. Just like in that Otis Redding song. Yeah, girl, Lorena on the beach, I'm doing nature.
You can't avoid it out here, it's effing everywhere.
Mind you, I'm going to have to get the appropriate footwear. My heels keep getting stuck in the sand. I got myself a little job at an all-night deponer. Convenience store. Located about 4 blocks from where I live. I had a job in market research, but I got fired when I didn't show up on June 24th. I said, hey, it's Saint-Jean-Baptiste Day, a holiday. They said, not here, it ain't. Gave me the boot. It's just as well. I was getting tired calling up people and asking them intimate questions about their feminine protection. So, how's life in Ottawa? Capital punishment? Brum-bump. I don't know about you, but I'm finding it hard adjusting to life in Canada. First of all, people don't know how to dress here. Everyone looks like they just crawled out of a kayak or some other outdoorsy thing. Bush bunnies. They wear big, cloddy boots all the time. The better to stomp slugs with, I guess. And I'm finding I'm overdressed for just about every occasion. And I can't even dress properly because there's not one store in the entire city that sells flesh-colored pantyhose the color of my flesh. I won't even talk about makeup or hair products. There are no black people in Vancouver. I can go for weeks where the only black face I see is my own reflection in a store window. And when I see another black person, I stop and try and flag them down. Everything shuts down at 1 a.m. like some bloody temperance colony. You can buy pornography in a corner store, but not beer and wine. Figure that one. And people get in your face for just about everything. For smoking cigarettes, for swearing, for waving your hands and raising your voice when you get excited. Don't get passionate. And above all, don't get political. It's like there's some kind of law against having a good time here. The BC no fun laws. They're really frustrating. Oh, and English. My God, it's omnipresent. Did you know that the stop signs actually say stop and nothing else in big, bold, white letters? Is it like that everywhere in Canada? Everywhere unilingual English signs? It's creepy. And I don't even understand this English. Back home, you were Italian, you were Greek, you were Polish, Hungarian, Dahomian, whatever. You spoke English. It was an agreement, a way of establishing common bonds. You were a part of something. Kind of made you feel like a revolutionary. Well, here, they use it to bludgeon people with, particularly immigrants. They say, you're in Canada now, speak English. And there is actually a group called the Society for the Preservation of the English Language. It's probably just a bunch of old Brits sitting around eating mushy peas and singing Rule Britannia. But still, it's offensive. I feel like I just traded one kind of language prejudice for another. Oh, I got a call from Peter. He's thinking of moving out here. And do you remember Leslie? She lives just 2 apartments down from me. I keep running into all kinds of folks from home. Every day there's a new batch of refugees, French and English. No, it's funny. In Montreal, none of us would give each other the time of day. But here, we cling to each other. There's a gang of about 20 of us expatriates. We get together every so often to eat and drink and smoke and talk and swear real loud. Hell, we even speak French. And we don't have to. Anymore. We go to restaurants that promise us a taste of home. Montreal-style bagels, and Montreal-style smoked meat, and Montreal-style barbecue chicken. You've come to the conclusion there must be some pokey little town somewhere in Missouri named Montreal, because we ain't at anything in Montreal, Quebec that tastes this nasty. The one thing we've learned living here is that we may all speak English, but we're sure as hell not Anglos.
No matter what Bourassa or Parizeau or any of them say, we are Quebecois. We each feel out of place in Canada, in our own way. I miss Montreal. I know I want to go home. But I can't, because I promised my mother I'd give it a year. 3 months down, 9 to go. Meanwhile, rain, 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 rain. Write soon. And if you get back to Montreal, tell her I love her. Your friend, Lorena. Steamies at Montreal Pool Room.
Smoke meat at Schwartz's. Schuller's kosher barbecue potato chips. Cott's black cherry soda, because if it's Cott, it's got to be good. Dry garlic spurbs.
I crave the flavors of my past and long to taste again the city that I love to eat. I will devour Montreal, savoring each sweet and sour memory that bursts upon my tongue. I'll dine at 8, and until 3, I'll gorge myself with reverie and laugh again with those I love. I'm going home, home, where the heart is, where the hate is, where the hard to have to happy to is. The prodigal daughter returns with a hunger.
Yeah. Chocolate cake at Fridays. Pandelli's pizza. Coquille Saint-Jacques and profiteroles at Chez Delmos on Notre Dame.
6180 de Rocher still stands. And though the filmy white curtains have been many times replaced with those of other styles by those of other tastes, the long glass door panels still gleam invitingly. I dare not ring the bell and ask to mount those steps again. I've crossed that threshold many times. Let other lives play out their mundane dramas between those walls. I am content to stand outside, remembering the secret and familiar spaces I once knew to be mine. Ooh, Schwartz's is still packed and spicy smelling. Pickled peppers, medium fat, double mustard, greasy fingers slipping on the cold tin of my black cherry pop. Oh, and lunch at Chalet Barbecue is still the cheapest deal in town. The Cafe Prague? Gone. Dragon Inn? Gone. Star of India? Gone. Cafe Castillo? Gone. Le Petit Al? Gone. Lungfung's? Gone. Finast's? Gone. Frank's? Gone. Strathcona Academy? Gone. Guy Drummond. Gone. Each pilgrimage finds that Mecca's disappeared without a forwarding address. And Catherine Street feels empty. The hollow-eyed store windows, once dazzling with bargains, stare blankly behind Alouette and Avondra signs. I stand on the corner of Peel and St. Catherine's at 5 p.m. on Thursday, waiting for the light to change, and feeling cramped by the buildings I'm seeing for the first time without their payday crowds. I cross the street alone. I delight at finding Grumpy still downstairs, but my once nightly retreat no longer feels jazzy nor exclusive with its pub-style renovations. My booze buddies have all moved on in body and in spirit, or aged beyond my recognition. I drink a toast to the echoing last call laughter of my past and leave drunk with disappointment. Montreal and I have changed. She does not bear the weight of her depression well, but sags like baggy stockings around an old woman's ankles. And I've become accustomed to green West Coast surroundings. Go to the farthest place and work your way back if you have to. You can always come home if you have to, my mother said. But even she is gone. Je retrouve mon espoir. Et soudainement, ma lueur est là, en face de moi. Et je trouve que ce point à l'horizon blanc n'est pas une roche, ni un tronc d'arbre, mais une femme, noire et complètement nue dans la neige. Je ne peux pas voir son visage, son dos est tourné vers moi. Mais je sais qu'elle n'est pas aveuglée par les rayons de soleil, ni gênée par le froideur. Elle se tient tout droite, sa tête haute et fière, ses mains placées hautainement sur ses hanches, ses pieds plantés solidement sur terre. Elle a l'air complètement chez elle dans cet environnement hostile. Qui est cette femme qui défie les éléments et ose revendiquer cet endroit pour elle? Je s'approche lentement d'elle et pose ma main sur son épaule. Ma main tremble. J'ai peur. Elle se tourne vers moi et je réalise alors... Elle est moi! C'est moi! Et je me réveille.
On October 30th, 1995, I felt as if I'd come dangerously close to being severed from both my personal and family histories. And Parizeau's remarks regarding Pure Land and ethnics just made it clear that the years and generations my family has invested in Quebec were perceived to be of no consequence or value. We would never be accepted as Québécois. Because we are black and English-speaking, we did not somehow have the same rights to love Quebec, to speak to that love, or to vote for it. When I moved to Canada, I didn't stop being a Québécois. I discovered I'd always been one. I did not forfeit my identity. I gained it. I am an expatriate Anglophone Montréalaise Québécoise. These are just a few of the memories of a life I lived in the land of my birth. I cannot be separated from them. They cannot be legislated out of being, nor can the Supreme Court rule on their validity. They are a part of the distinct whole that is me. Memory serves me. An exile. In Canada.
Québécois errant, banni de ses foyers. Québécois errant, banni de ses foyers. Parcourait en pleurant des pays étrangers. Parcourait en pleurant des pays étrangers.
You've just heard a second play in our Black History Month special, Je Me Souviens, was performed and written by Lorena Gale. Special thanks to friends and the acting community in Vancouver for Neighborhood Voices. Portions of the sound design from the original stage play provided by John McCullough. The recording engineer was Chris Cutress. Je Me Souviens was produced and directed in Vancouver for radio by Heather Brown. Let me welcome once again in our studios our guest host for our Black History Month special, Alison Seeley Smith. Hello, Alison.
Hello, Damiano.
Where will we be next week? Is it week three of our 7-week tour through Black culture?
That's right. We will, in fact, be in week three next week, and that's when we will be presenting a series of short plays that both explore and celebrate the worldview that comes out of the many, many cultures that make up the Black experience here in Canada. Now, this special 4-part show, produced with the CBC Radio's Outfront program, features Lisa Codrington, an exciting new voice on the Toronto scene, Vadney Haynes, a writer who actually hails from Montreal and has been working closely with Black Theatre Workshop in Montreal, Joseph Pierre, a strong, vibrant, edgy urban voice on Toronto's theater scene, and Diane Roberts, a theater stalwart, better known as a dramaturge and writer who is coming out with her first play. Now, all of these are plays that Obsidian has either had a hand in developing or is interested in taking to the stage at some point in the future.
Thank you, Alison. See you next week.
I'll see you then.
For more information about this series of dramatic programming and all the special programming that CBC Radio has planned, please go to our website at www.cbc.ca/blackhistory. That's it for tonight. Stay with us now for After Hours on CBC Radio 2. Good night.
You're tuned to CBC Radio 2, Classics and Beyond, in Ottawa at 103.3 FM.
She's one quarter of the funniest 22 minutes on television. Meet Kathy Jones, star of this hour's 22 Minutes, at the next CBC Radio Talks. I'm Lucy Van Olden-Barneveld. Join me this Tuesday at noon when I talk with comedian and actress Kathy Jones at the National Arts Center, 4th Stage, 53 Elgin Street. Bring your lunch. Admission is free. Visit ottawa.cbc.ca for details.
Here is the CBC News. I'm Rafi Vigod. Prime Minister Paul Martin was in Quebec City and Montreal today, where both appearances were dominated by questions about the federal government sponsorship scandal. With Martin on the road, opposition members of Parliament zeroed in on members of his cabinet during question period. Chris Hall reports.
The Honourable, the Leader of the Opposition.
With Paul Martin not in the Commons, the opposition focused on other cabinet holdovers from the previous Liberal government. Opposition Leader Grant Hill started with the Deputy Prime Minister, Anne McClellan.
When did she know about the sponsorship problem, and why didn't she speak up?
McClellan was a member of the Cabinet Committee on Unity under former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien.
None of us were aware of the details, the allegations.
From there, the questioning veered to Quebec cabinet ministers. Lucien Robillard was first.
Perhaps the former president of the Treasury Board can tell us how $100 million could be ripped off from taxpayers right under our nose.
And on it went. Some answered for themselves, most did not. Public Works Minister Stephen Owen says the opposition and Canadians will have to wait for the public inquiry. Chris Hall, CBC News, Ottawa.
People in Nunavut are voting in the territory's second election. It's minus 50 or colder in many of the voting areas. Nunavut became Canada's newest jurisdiction in 1999. In the first election, the main issue was setting up a legislative assembly and getting it running. This time, voters are looking for improvements to housing, employment, and education policies. Candidates are competing for 19 seats in the assembly. The MLAs will then select a territorial leader and a cabinet. The federal government is making it easier for cattle producers to get compensation from its Cull Animal Program. The program was introduced last November to help ranchers deal with the impact of BSE. Federal Agriculture Minister Bob Speller says ranchers have made it clear they don't want to wait until their animals are slaughtered to receive financial assistance. Speller announced the change to the program during question period. BC's busiest border crossing is now open after being shut down for an hour this afternoon because of an explosive scare. Canada Customs stopped a vehicle containing a live grenade. Salma Nur Mohammed has the story.
It all began when a customs official searched a van coming into Canada from Washington and found a live hand grenade in the glove compartment. But Surrey RCMP Constable Tim Shields says it turns out the 28-year-old woman who was driving the vehicle made a wrong turn.
She was actually trying to drive to Vancouver, Washington, but she inadvertently followed the signs to Vancouver, British Columbia, and then, of course, came upon the Canada-U.S. border where the vehicle was searched.
The woman is from Houston, Texas. As for the grenade, Shields says it was probably put into the glove box by the woman's husband, who works for the U.S. military.
The woman didn't have any idea that this was inside the car. It appears to be completely accidental.
Shields says the quick response by police and customs officials shows the system works.
We work very closely with the Canada Customs and Revenue Agency, and we work hand-in-hand with them for the integrity of our border.
The border crossing was closed for an hour. Shields says the woman likely won't face charges. Salmanar Mohammed, CBC News, Surrey.
BC Premier Gordon Campbell is being sued by a man once charged with threatening him. Roy Harris is also suing the RCMP and Vancouver police. He was charged with harassment and uttering threats after sending an email to Campbell last November, but those charges were dropped. Harris claims he's still being persecuted by the RCMP and people in the government and is suing for $800,000. The Walt Disney Company has turned down an unsolicited takeover offer from the cable television company Comcast Corporation. Disney's board of directors says it has full confidence in the company's CEO, Michael Eisner. The board says the offer of almost $49 billion U.S. undervalues Disney's holdings. They include the ABC television network, the cable sports network ESPN, movie studios, and theme parks. The board also says Comcast's offer amounts to more than $3 per share below the market value for Disney stock. And that's the CBC News.
Here is the weather forecast for the National Capital Region. A few clouds overnight with a low of minus 16. For tomorrow, a mix of sun and cloud. Tuesday's high, minus 7 degrees. The outlook for Wednesday, sunshine with a high of minus 3. On Thursday, we can expect a mix of sun and cloud, a 40% chance of flurries, a high of minus 5. And for Friday, sunshine with a high of minus 3. This is CBC Radio 2, 103.3 in Ottawa.